kissing your neck. I love your body, I love your mind. They will change, so will mine. But you are my best guess at the future. You are my best guess. If I were a gambling man, I am, you'd be my best bet. Tracing your tan lines, making you mine. If this doesn't work, but I don't wanna be fine. I want you, you, you.
Lucy Dacus with Best Guess. Before that, you heard Holland with I'm Not Afraid here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. Best Guess, obviously, one of the best music videos of 2025, calling it early. And I'm Not Afraid by Holland. Holland is often known to be the first openly out K-pop idol. He debuted quite a number of years ago, actually. And from the moment of his debut, he declared basically, like, I'm gay. My music is going to be for gay people who might be struggling and for gay people who want to party. And I'm Not Afraid, I think, is a very nice song. I'm talking about The Wedding Banquet, 2025, but also 1993. And yeah, there are going to be spoilers in today's episode. I didn't mention that before, but they're going to be spoilers. And I think one of the reasons why I enjoyed the 2025 version so much, again, sobbing in front of many people at the theater several times throughout the film. I think that it is a really grounded portrayal of the way that queer Asian people navigate life. And at the same time, it is just really unapologetically queer. Whereas in 1993, I think it's a little bit different. That doesn't mean that it's bad. 1993's version of The Wedding Banquet, I think, serves a really good purpose. It is the 1990s, and for the most part, I think that movie is actually speaking to a cis-hetero audience. I mean, the resolve of the conflict really is that, you know, the patriarch of the family approves of the main character's sexuality, the main character being the patriarch's son. And the other thing about the 1993 version as well is that just in its most basic form, you know, it is about the life and struggle of a gay Asian man who needs to try to, like, negotiate his identity, feels that he has to negotiate his identity in order to receive familial acceptance. But he himself also seems to struggle with his own acceptance of himself. The concept of, like, his true identity comes into there a number of times. But the fact that it is this really, I think, empathetic portrayal of this man feeling like he needs to hide a really important part of himself from his family, only to then receive unconditional love and support from the family. I think in 1993, for straight audiences, is really radical. For cishet audiences, is really radical. But that also means that for me, I guess, a person who, you know, I was born in the 90s, but I also have seen the ways in which queer media representation has changed. I've also seen, I think, like, little steps of progress in terms of, like, cultural and social acceptance of queer people in East Asian communities and in much of East Asia itself. The thing that makes 2025 exciting for me is that it is a huge, it is, like, really, really, in my opinion, really, really removed from the need of approval of that patriarch. In fact, there's basically no patriarch throughout the movie. I'll talk about that later. But the exciting thing, I think, about 2025 is that it highlights, it's really, okay, this is gonna be kind of convoluted. If you're Asian, if you're queer and Asian, write in. I'm typicallytuesdays@gmail.com, or you can send me a DM, typicallytuesdays on Instagram. The thing I think makes it really grounded and really Asian is that this movie is very much about family. In the same way, in a similar way, no, yeah, in the same way as the 1993 version. It's just that family looks different. It's just that the concept of family is explored in a different way. And that, I think that it is really unapologetic in claiming both parts of, like, the identity of this movie being a queer Asian movie. I'll talk a little bit more about that after this music break. Here is Hold Me Down by Nonla. Take Heart Dreams by Black Belt Eagle Scout here on Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. Hi, I'm Leslie, and yes, I did cry several times while watching The Wedding Banquet 2025, directed by Andrew Ahn, and I'm going to tell you why. This movie, I felt like, was just kind of life-affirming. As a queer Asian woman, I felt like the movie itself was really grounded in the experiences of a lot of queer Asian people. I think he does so by highlighting the fact that love in all of its forms, it can be very complicated, because as human beings, we are complicated and we are flawed and we do things that we're not proud of, and all we can do is try to make up for it. And that's really portrayed throughout the film, especially with the couples, you know, with both Min and Chris and Lee and Angela. There are multiple points where they will have conflicts and, you know, they'll like try to make up afterwards, communicating. I mean, like, and through basically the very last minute, it was like a big conflict with these couples. But it also, you know, just because they had a fight, just because they had a disagreement, just because they might not be ready to be on the same page, doesn't necessarily mean that they don't love each other. They do. It's just the fact that love can be so scary. It can change you in ways that you're not prepared to. It can make you do things that you are not ready to do, and it can make you doubt whether or not you're ready to do those things. But most significantly, and I wrote it here in my notes, it says, "Thesis: Andrew Ahn presents a new Gaijin classic in its embracing of family values from an Asian and queer perspective." This movie does something so well in that it manages to highlight the fact that, like, familial love is so definitely and so always so, so complicated. I want to level with you here. Okay, actually, so here's what I mean, right? Like, you know, one of the things that's really interesting about this movie and really refreshing is that there really isn't a family, a single biological family presented in this movie that is the traditional nuclear family. Like, Angela was raised by a single mom, her single mom. Min was raised by his grandparents because his parents both passed away when he was young. Chris is the father figure of his also adult cousin, and then, you know, in the end, it all accumulates to these two couples coming together and raising this, like communal biological family in some ways. So it really takes out that kind of, like, patriarchal figure that's really present throughout 1993. And in that way, I think it's really interesting, because that seems actually very queer, right? There's no patriarch, really. In fact, the most prominent familial characters, biologically familial characters, are the matriarchs. But really importantly, Andrew Ahn doesn't let us fall into this trap that says, you know, if your biological family rejects you, then you must lean into your chosen family, who are way better and more accepting than your biological family. That's kind of the narrative that I grew up hearing a lot when I was a younger queer Asian woman. The idea that, like, if your family rejects you, you must cut them off. And you must find your people in the outside world. That's not to say that that's not the truth for some people. Obviously, it is for a lot of queer and trans people. And you see that happening often in queer and trans Asian people. But this movie also shows us this theme that I think that's like kind of adult and kind of mature, which is that biological family, chosen family, doesn't matter what it is, both are complicated. There are these beautiful scenes revolving like reconciliation between Angela and her mom, and also Min and his grandmother, and one, sobbing openly in the theater, but two, you know, it's kind of life-affirming, because how many of us have craved to hear those similar words of affirmation from our own parents? And also, how many of us have, right? As I get older, I realize that even though my relationship with my parents is really complicated in the ways that many other people have very complicated relationships with their parents, it doesn't necessarily mean that we can't try to make something work. It also doesn't necessarily mean that they won't eventually try to make it up. In a similar way, with the kind of chosen family in this movie, as I said, we see multiple times throughout, it is not always sunshine and rainbows with them. These are four people who have their own desires, they have their own goals, they have their own confusions and questions about life. And that means sometimes they react in ways that are unpleasant, that can potentially hurt their partners or their friends, that can potentially hurt their parents and familial figures. It doesn't necessarily mean that all is lost. Rather, it means really that these people are human. They're just like you and me. I think that's why Andrew Ahn's film is so affirming, because it really presents this like picture of queer people and Asian people who are not perfect at all. I heard something really funny as the credits were rolling after the movie in the theater. The two people sitting behind me, they were like, I didn't like any of these characters. I hated all of them. And it really tickled me, because I really could not help but to fall in love with every single one of them. They felt so real. They felt so grounded. Because they're not perfect, because they are simply trying to make it through life in the best way that they can, and trying to do good by themselves and other people. These are people who are surrounded by love, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's always easy. It simply means that it is an integral part of their lives and being human. I'm going to leave that there for today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you go check out The Wedding Banquet, both versions. Again, 1993 is pretty cool, but 2025 is my favorite version. Quick note on content: if you are not into jokes and gags and shenanigans about essentially two drunk people who have intimate physical relationships with each other while drunk, maybe avoid both movies, because a big plot point is about that. But other than that, they're good times. Tune in to more great CJSF programming. Check out Bitcoover every Tuesday from 8 to 10. Vancouver's only chiptune broadcast. It's a really, really fun time. Last week's show was like all like kind of like Nintendo music, which was really, really cute. And there's more of that stuff to come on the program. Bitcouver every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10. My name is Leslie, and I'm going to wrap things up with one final song now. The song is kind of just about love. Bro, that's what we want in this world. Here's Haley Blaise with her cover of Sweet Surrender. Here at 90.1 FM, CJSF, typically Tuesdays. I'll talk to you very soon.
Doesn't mean much. Doesn't mean anything at all. The life I left behind me is a cold room. I've crossed the last line.